Richie Alcoholic.
Richie.
What's up? I've lost her. Christina, thank you for asking me to come out and speak. I want to welcome all the newcomers, congratulate anyone on a milestone, whatever that may be. Welcome everyone. Happy Sunday. Check us out. AA over NFL, that's wild. You guys are real ones. That's what that comes down to. Or not big fans of football. Either way. Amber, thank you so much. Crushed. Never thinks she crushes and crushes every time. It's funny how it works. What our heads tell us and what comes out, two different things sometimes. Grateful to be here. Grateful for some friends showing up. Thank you. And before I lose you to whatever your plans are for the evening, there's a couple things you should know. Definitely know after that. Go ahead and tune out. Don't worry about it. Cut, copy, paste. Just another AA pitch. The first of which is I love my life. I love my life. My life is really good. Like, my life is dumb good. Unfair good. The second thing is it's 100% due to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was a little embarrassed about that. I don't want to give AA 100% credit. That's unfair. Like, I did some work, you know, and so I want to take some credit. But the reality is without AA, I don't have this dumb good life. And also, if you're new, welcome. I'm sure you're really stoked for me and my awesome life. We can talk after the meeting. I'll give you details, show you pictures of the kids, let you look at my teeth. It's crazy. Crushing it, man. I put work in on these, you know? And, yeah, credit scores, all the things. It's wild. AA works, tell you what. And if that's all you get from my pitch, just knowing that when I came in here, I couldn't stop. My life was in shambles, and today I'm stopped, and my life is pretty awesome. Then you know that this is a safe place. This is a place where miracles happen. Let's get weird, right? Let's just jump into it. I don't know how you guys like to get down. I got weird when I drank, so why not keep it the same way sober? Just know that I'm not very bright. Like, I'm not, I always feel like Forrest Gump or something. I'm not a smart man. It's weird. In school, what's funny is I don't study. I don't do homework or anything like that. But you give me a number two pencil in one of those bubble tests, I crush it. Top percentile. I think the problem, here's why I know I'm not smart, is because I think I am smart. I think I know some things. And I always think I can find the shortcut. I'm all about shortcuts. Work smarter, not harder. And, I don't know. Yeah. All signs point left, and I'm like, I bet you can go right. The door says push, and I'm like, I try pulling it, you know, just to see. I don't know. And because I think I'm smarter than the average bear, and that got me into a lot of trouble. I was raised by my mom. She was 19 when she had me. She had just turned 19, and we grew up together. Her parents, my grandparents, told her, when they found out, she tried to hide the fact that she was pregnant. At a certain point, she could hide it no longer, and they told her, if you decide to keep it, you're out. And it is your main speaker this evening. They were not joking. They dropped her off at St. Anne's Home for Unwed Mothers. They pulled into the parking lot. They didn't even walk her in. They were in the middle of the parking lot, put down that Aquafresh green luggage, the hard case luggage with the gold latches. No one ever bought a new set of that. You just ended up with a piece of it, you know? Blown out elastic, the whole bit. But anyway, they put it down on the cement there, and they said, hope you learned your lesson, and they drove off. And at 6 months pregnant, she had to carry that luggage inside, walk inside to a very foreign place, 60 other young women about to have a child or just had a child, and she started living there. And every day the nuns would come up to her and say, there's an infertile Catholic family that would love that child. Every day. Finally, she had enough. She said, listen, sister, I'll make a deal with you. If it's a girl, you can give her to that family. But if it's a boy, I'm keeping him. kind of won the coin toss on that one, you know what I mean? Like, could have looked a lot different. We had a lot of fun. I can't imagine being 19 and raising a kid solo. I didn't know my father. She didn't, he bailed right away. And I never met him, Bob. I never met Bob. All good. I heard Bob was you know, they had this like romantic, you know, high school, you know, rabbits relationship, you know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? Some of us like a little more Peppa. And, oh man, where am I going? This is recorded, right? Okay, good. Just making sure this is forever. I never met Bob, but yeah, so I can't imagine being 19 and raising a child. Like, I'm 46 now, and I've got two little ones, and, you know, it's tough as is with, like, help and all the things, and I just can't imagine being alone and much younger. And she made it happen. My mom worked 2-3 jobs at a time sometimes. I was a latchkey kid at 6 years old. I had, like, one of those, like, little ball chain necklaces with the key on it, and I'd let myself in. I'd walk home from, you know, school and that. If I was smart, as soon as I walked in the door, I'd turn the lights on because I was going to sit in front of the TV until bed. And when you turn off the TV and it's all dark, they can get you. You know who they are, right? What's funny, they showed up later in my usage, you know, but that was weird. I was like, I haven't seen you guys in so long. One of these through the blinds, you know? I don't know how you guys drink, but I get a little weird. Yeah, and then... I think my mom felt bad about that. My mom, like, we're super tight. She lives in Ireland now, and, you know, we talk almost every day. And you know, we had a lot of fun growing up. You know, I was the type, like, I'd pass out in the car. She worked 2-3 jobs, pick me up from wherever I was at, you know, or if I was home. There were sometimes I was home, sometimes someone else was watching me, a family member or that. She'd pick me up, and she'd carry me up, like, 3 flights of stairs after working a double and then put me in bed in that. And I'm talking, like, 6-7 years old, you know. I can't imagine. I'm like, just tired. And she handled it, showed me love, etiquette, all the stuff. And because I hope you understand, I'm not an alcoholic because my mom, I had a single parent household, and you know, we had, you know, water and cereal, or like powdered milk and cereal. Yeah. I remember having powdered milk and cereal. Mom would be like, it's just like the real thing. And I'm like, no, it ain't. Like, you know what milk isn't? Blue. Like, why is this blue? Like, real thing. No, then just get the real thing. What are we doing? I used to be so upset. I hated powdered milk. Like, those times were, like, not cool. I did not like that. But you know, we had a lot of love in the household. And somewhere along the way, my mom got herself into UCLA. I don't know how she pulled that off, but she made it into UCLA. I'm a local boy. I grew up in LA. And she got into UCLA. We lived in UCLA housing. We were just by there today, actually. And it was weird. I met my best friend there, Damien. And Damien's mom was a single mom. We were about the same age, 2 months apart, and we were left to our own devices most of the time. You know, our parents were both either in school or working. And so the two of us just ran the streets, robbing houses, tagging, tackle football on cement, like dumb stuff. Stuff that made sense in the moment. Just a couple cluckheads trying to find the come up. That's how we operated. We were always on the fringe of gangs. We weren't in gangs at that point, but we thought we were pretty tough, you know what I mean? Like 80 pounds, you know what I mean? Like, what's up? we used to, I don't know if you guys remember, Damien and I go separate routes, right? But I get thrown into Catholic school, which I made it a year and got kicked out. Anyway, Damien goes the gang route. But before, we end up coming back into each other's lives some years later. But before, the last time I see this fool, he's in size 50 Dickies. And I'm not talking like European size 50 Dickies. He's got a white t-shirt that he irons and creases, which apparently that's like really gangster. Ironing. I don't like ironing a button up, but apparently ironing is like really gangster, which kind of makes you wonder about like vacuuming and dusting, which must be like, I don't know, mob boss or something, but whatever. And we used to have those canvas belts. I don't even remember those canvas belts with the chrome belt buckle with the initial of whatever you were repping, you know, like your set, your hood, like, you know, your name. We had letters that didn't even match each other, let alone anything that we represent. I had like an N. Like, I didn't live anywhere N. I didn't rep some set that was N. My name is Richard Blair. There's not even an N in the middle. Like, I couldn't associate N to anything, but I was like super tough with my N, you know? And so that's the last time I see this fool. And I see him at this coffee shop in West LA back when you could smoke inside, and he's at a two-top by himself, and he's, you know, got his legs crossed the artsy way. Like, he's thinking, you know, he's like got his non-filter camel. He's got like really, I'd have to say these pants were tight. Like, if I had to describe them, they were not size 50 Dickies. They were dark brown. I'd guess a polyester blend, pretty form fitting. He had a mismatched polo on, and I didn't get it. Like, I'm looking at him like, oh, this fool, man, something must have happened. He must have like bumped his head or something. And I didn't realize it was that fresh out of rehab look. You know what I mean? That $2 Salvi outfit. You know what I mean? Or like that Goodwill joint. Like you can get an outfit for $2. You know what I'm saying? And I'm pretty sure that's what he paid for that outfit. And he's got this deep, broody look on his face, like he's thinking these really deep thoughts, you know? Damien was never thinking really deep thoughts. Like, he was just looking mysterious and really quiet so he could try and get laid. And, like, it worked like a charm. Dude, the kid was a genius. Like, me, I should have taken notes. Like, I really should have taken notes. There was zero mystery, and I couldn't shut up. So I was pretty lonely. It's fine. You know, it's funny. My mom, I think she felt bad about being gone so much, that she worked so much and she was always gone, that I was alone a lot, right? I think she felt bad about that. So my mom tucked me in until I was 15, which, you know, you get tucked in until you're 15, you kind of grow up kind of tough, you know? People, like, see you and they cross the street to avoid you because they're like, yo, that fool, like, I can't trust that fool. I'm just playing. I was kind of a pansy, but whatever. Damien and I ran around for a while, and I didn't know it. When I saw Damien, I go, hey, I see him, and I hadn't seen him in years, like I said. And I go, hey, Boyo, his nickname was Boyo. I go, hey, Boyo, let's go throw a couple back over at Del's Saloon. He goes, oh, nah, man, I don't drink. And I said out loud, oh, my God, I'm so sorry. I felt so bad because I realized we're the same age. This fool must have some sort of health condition. Like, he's about to die. And so I said, oh, my God, I'm so sorry. He goes, nah, man, don't trip. I'm an AA. I don't take anything that affects me from the neck up. What? I never heard anyone talk like that. I was like, I don't understand. I'm like, what are you even talking about right now? And I said, and he saw the look of confusion and judgment. And he says, you know what, dude? Don't worry about it. It's not for you. I was like, excuse me? I don't know about you, but I'm kind of Goldilocks like that, where it's like, don't invite me and expect me to come to your like little party or whatever, but also don't not invite me. You know what I mean? Like, maybe your little neck up club might benefit from my presence. You know what I mean? Like, I kind of want to check out this neck up club. Not enough. Like, it was the perfect 12-step call on someone like me. Everyone in my life had an idea where I should be at that point. My mom thought I should be back in college, which I thought was super cute. You know, I went to one day of SMC, Santa Monica City College, and I never went back. And then my grandmother, she was a smart woman. She said, you should join the armed forces. Like, she didn't even specify which division, you know. And they were both right. In all honesty, I could have benefited from either one of those things. Education, discipline, direction, all that. Because I was aimless. I had no clue what I was doing with my life. I was always looking towards, like, the negative. Like, I was always looking for the shortcut. Again, I love shortcuts. I like the come up. I always think that there's a way that I forget what math class it is when they go from numbers to, like, letters and points, which is not math. That's letters and points, you know? But they talk about the shortest distance between two points is straight line. Not for me. I got an angle to get there quicker, you know? And watch, check it out. And then, meanwhile, I take the scenic route. And people are like watching. The people that love me the most have a front row seat at me just bumping my head. I'm like, man, if you would just follow the straight and narrow, you would get so far ahead. I'm like, nah, you don't get it. And no, they got it. I didn't get it. And, you know, the way that drinking, they talk about in the book, it's a progressive illness. And I didn't understand that. I didn't understand that things would progressively get worse, never better. And I really thought that what you saw, this little issue that I had, that I would ascend to such great heights that you would come crawling back for a handout. At which point, you know, because I'm in the history books, I'm doing, you know, like, I'm doing big things. And meanwhile, I'm not. I'm, like, digging my way out, and I just keep getting lower and lower, and just getting worse. Yeah, so Damien and I start kicking it tough. Like, had Damien said, hey, you should come check out A&A, I would have been like, oh, bro, steer clear, my guy. Like, I'm good. I don't need all that. But instead, what he said was, don't worry, it's not for you, which was perfect. And so he wasn't the enemy. So we start kicking it tough like old times, catching the RTD out to Hollywood, the old Rough, Tough, and Dangerous, and trying to get into clubs. trying to get into clubs, typically get denied. Most of the time, every so often we find out where the party was in the hills, or sometimes we weasel our way into the club, or most nights, let's be real, we ended up at a coffee shop just throwing dominoes like all night. But it didn't matter if it was the best night of our lives or complete and utter boredom. Damien stayed stone cold sober, which was so crazy to me. I didn't understand that, because if it was like penthouse or gutter, I gotta be on one, because I can't stand point A. Point A is where I'm at. I despise point A. Penthouse or gutter, doesn't matter. Point B is this magical place that doesn't exist, because as soon as I get there, it's point A again, because I brought me with me, you know? It's not cool. I guess the best way to describe point B is weird. I like to get weird, like I said. I don't know how you guys operate. Damien ends up like one night, it's actually the morning of Thanksgiving in 1998, and it's about 6:45, and I've been up for a couple few days drinking. I don't know how you guys get when you've been up for a couple few days drinking. I hadn't slept, I hadn't eaten properly, and I got a lot of booze in me. And this fool hits me up at 6:45. We're like still like mobbing around. We already missed the bus prices that jumped back up. And he's like, hey, roll with me to this meeting right quick. And I said, hey, no. Like, I'm not trying to go to NARC headquarters, you know what I mean, at like 6:45 on Thanksgiving morning or whatever. He's like, no, it's at 7:30. And it's over at this log cabin in West Hollywood. I was like, okay, Lincoln, like, what year is it, log cabin? Sure enough, we ended up getting there. I will get there. But I'm like, how has this place survived all these years? It was like a real log cabin. Like, this is wild. And then I wasn't going to go. Here's what was going on. You have to understand. Like I said, 2-3 days drinking, no sleep, no food. I get weird. My head says, hey, man, you're in public. You need to not freak people out. And my body goes, ha, 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 like, not listening. And it starts doing some really weird things, like things that I cannot control. Like, I get this weird jaw tick where, like, my jaw pulls back. And then I start swallowing nothing. But it's not an easy swallow. It's like, I got to put some work in. And as soon as I swallow nothing, I kind of got to swallow nothing again. And I'm like... And then intermittently, I do this weird predator eye flash thing. And then I think I see something go by, or like the shadow of something go by. And by the time I look, it's gone. Every time, it's always gone. And then I realize you're looking at me, looking at nothing, probably thinking I'm on one, which I am, but you can't let you know that. So I turn back like, I'm fine. So when he says, let's go to NARC headquarters, I know for a fact that's the last place I need to be. I need to get to 4 very private walls so I can remove... I get really... Like, my clothes feel really restrictive when I'm drinking. And so I got to get them off. And I'm quickly in the buff, like, ha-ha. And I've arrived. And so I need to get to 4 very private walls so I can remove my clothing, sweat profusely, and just, like, pick my face or whatever, right? And... But then he says what he needs to get me to go. And he says, hey, will you just go to support me? And I got that loaded loyalty, you know, like I got my people's back. When I'm out there, it doesn't have to make sense. So I'll get back to that first meeting. But 6 months later, Damien's not sober anymore, right? And we're running. And I didn't stay sober. He just introduced me. I ended up going to that meeting, and I'll tell you about it. But 6 months later, he's loaded. I've never been sober. And we're running and gunning. He says, on a wild night, hey, bro, let's go rob Rite Aid. And I waited a beat. I didn't say a word. I had questions, but I knew he knew I had some questions, and more than likely, he was going to answer them. And sure enough, he did. And he said, back door's open, no cameras, place is empty. Let's roll. I'm all in. Rob Rite Aid, I'm down. Go to an AA meeting, instant no. That tells you where my head's at, what makes sense when I'm out there. The alcoholic life seems the only normal one. And everyone else was dumb. I'm like, you guys are idiots. The way that you operate in life and all this and 9-to-5, productive member of society, all this. I'm like, what are you even doing? Paying taxes? You guys are cluckheads. I got this. Watch this. I'm going to come up like greater than anybody. And the reality, as you all know, it's like I just continue to descend. My life continues to get worse. And eventually, so I go to that. I'll go back to that meeting now. So I go to this meeting. So I'm like, all right. He goes, he prefaces our little field trip to A&A and he says, don't worry, it's not a cult. And I go, oh, cool. Wait, what? Like, I've never been anywhere on the planet where someone said beforehand, don't worry, it's not a cult. And I'm like, okay, so it's a cult, you know? I don't say that, but I know it. So we get there. It's Thanksgiving morning, 98. And at the morning meeting at the log cabin, if anyone's been, that's a chipper bunch. They are real happy. Everyone there is not just an alcoholic. They're always, hi, so-and-so, grateful recovering alcoholic. And you're like, ah, just say your name. Like, you're freaking me out. And the place is popping. Oh, mind you, I forgot. I'm wearing a bright orange shirt, and it says, I heart heroin. quite possibly the greatest shirt ever made. And big old puffy, glittery red heart. And... So my boy, we get there and the place is popping. Spot to be 6:45, 7 in the morning. And everyone, and I know the place is called Alcoholics Anonymous. And I think I know what those words mean separately. I don't know what happens when you put them together besides improper grammar. But we get there and everyone, it's 1998. I'm not an alcoholic at this point. I'm like nowhere near it. I'm just here to support a friend. But I'm looking at all y'all and I'm thinking, man, I'm probably closer to being drunk than any of you. Like, you guys are dressed well, pulled up in some nice cars. Some of y'all know each other outside the meeting horizontally. And it's like, you drink like I drink, like that doesn't happen, you know? You know what I'm saying? don't judge. So I was a little weirded out. And then my friend goes, hey, we have to go inside and save seats. I'm like, save seats? It's so packed at this meeting that we don't even get seats together. We get one in the middle, one with the against the wall with the bench, like with the wall behind it, right? Which I would have loved that seat. But anyway, he's like, let's go outside and smoke a stove. I walk off to the side. I have a Lucky Strike non-filter. My boy goes, you know, I put on my best. I'm here to support a friend face. What y'all saw was newcomer. So everyone keeps coming up to me. Hey, what's up? Because I'm like emaciated. It's November. I'm in a t-shirt. It's, you know, it's LA, but I'm cold. And I'm just sitting there like, you know, non-filter, like I love heroin shirt, just whatever, tripping. And this big, tall, brash fella comes up to me and goes, hey, man, where'd you get that shirt? And then what I thought I said was, this chick I hooked up with, she left it at my house. You know, this is too good of a shirt. You don't give this back. I think what came out was more along the lines of, yeah, it's like, I just... And he's like, right on, brother. And he just walks off. The next guy comes up to you and goes, hey, man, you need to take that shirt off, dude. That's a trigger. And in my head, I'm thinking, like the part of a gun? I'm like, what is he talking? And he goes, dude, that shirt could cause someone to get loaded. I was like, loaded? I was like, what's with all the gun references? Like, I had never gotten loaded in my life. Like, I don't get paid on Fridays and, like, hit up the boys like, hey, you guys want to go get loaded? Like, I don't talk like that. So I was just super weirded out by the whole thing. This guy keeps grilling me. Who's your sponsor? How much time you got? And I'm like, just get me away from this dude. All of a sudden, the bell rings, meeting time. I'm like, cool. Get me away from this clown, you know? And then my boy, Boyo, puts me in the seat in the middle. And then he takes the bench with the wall behind him, right? I got to keep an eye. There's a creepy old dude next to me. She was stunning, not to be no one can be trusted. This is NARC headquarters. Y'all are suspects. So I got to keep eyes on everything. First person gets up. They're like, hi, so-and-so alcoholic. Everyone chimes in. Hi, so-and-so. I'm like, oh, what? Like, we're going to start chanting names. I was like, I don't have a dictionary handy, but that feels cult-ish. You know what I mean? Diet cult or whatever. Like, you know. And then the next person gets up. They're going to read a portion of chapter 5 from the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I thought, oh, really? Nothing cultish about that. This potion of the spell of the sorcerer's big book. And I'm looking at it like, yo, I've seen bigger. Like, oh, but that's the big book. All these other books that are bigger, like not the big book. I'm like, man, y'all are on one. And I was super tripped out by the whole thing. And then they read this chapter 5 thing. And at the end, A, B, and then everyone chimed in again at this meeting. They don't do it here, but at this meeting they did. God could and would if he were. And I didn't know what the last word was. Didn't need to because I heard chanting and I heard God. And I look at my boy on the bench against the wall. I go, this is a cult. I was like, this is a cult. And he's doing the whole pump the brakes thing, you know, because he knows I'm on one, right? And then the next person gets up, they're like, there's no dues or fees for AA membership. And I'm thinking, that's cool. Like, at least they're not charging for this creepy cult, you know? And then all of a sudden, a basket goes by, and I'm like, he just said there's no dues or fees. I was like, and I almost said, old dude next to me is putting a real dollar in. And I almost said to him, oh, no. He just said there's no dues or fees. But I stopped myself because I realized it's this weird reverse psychology, you know, like Jedi mind trick where they're like, there's no dues or fees. And everyone's like, there's no dues or fees. And I'm like, yeah, you can't Jedi a Jedi, you know what I mean? Like, nice try. I'm not the one. And anyway, I was super tripped out by the whole thing. And Southern California, boy, we love to clap, man. We clap. Someone takes another sober breath. We're like, brah! You know, like, whoever makes the coffee gets, like, the biggest applause. You know, you're like, oh, just want to follow you to Starbucks, you know, see if you, like, thank the barista. Oh, it's a grande. You put the lid on. Like, yeah, you guys clapping over coffee. I was like, I can't stand this. At the end, we held hands and said the Lord's Prayer. Oh, so we passed the basket. I did the math. It was like $60. So I look at Boyo. I go, who gets the cash? Like, who gets the money? Because I thought it was a charity thing, you know? Like, you put your name in the hat or, like, the brokest mofo there gets the money. And, you know, it's not like that. And he just, like, and so he just waves me off, you know? And I didn't get it. I didn't understand. We paid for the rent. We paid for the books, paid for the cake, the coffee, and all the stuff, right? I just didn't get it. Bless you. And I just didn't understand how these things work, and I was super tripped out. At the end, we held hands, said the Lord's Prayer, and I'm like, cool. And then walked outside, lit up a Lucky Strike. My boy comes out, and he goes, hey, what'd you think? I go, never. He goes, what? And I go, never. He goes, what are you talking about? I was like, I'll never let it get so bad I have to end up here. And then I realized he had that look of like sadness. And I was like, hey, yo, listen, like, you, it looks like you found what you were looking for. What'd you guys say? Keep fighting the good fight. Come back tomorrow. Like, do you, my guy? I ain't the one. You know, just, I'm not, I don't get down like that. And funny thing about Never. Here I am in Neverland. Like a little sober Peter Pan, you know what I mean? Man, it's wild. The book talks about being beaten into a state of reasonableness. Essentially, what I get from that is I went through alcoholic boot camp, and I needed to understand that alcohol wasn't an option. It'll always be an option available to me, but as far as like a viable solution to my problems in my life, it is not. At one point, it worked, and it felt like it, like someone I heard one time, it felt like it gave me wings, and then it took away the sky. And I love that. I think that's such a beautiful way of saying it, you know. One of the many beautiful things about this program, right? You know, besides Amber, but, you know, whatever. Come on, that's low-hanging fruit, guys. That's super easy. But I'll take it. But I love this program. So I finally come back to this program, tail between my legs. I know better than everyone here. I'm smarter than the average bear. I'm the Ticonderoga champ. Like, I'm the number two pencil guy. Like, what you guys, no offense, but what y'all figured out in 12 steps, let's be real, I could probably lock it down in two or three, you know? And I keep hearing about four and nine. I'm thinking I'll just rock those and, like, life will get better. Four and nine, because if they were meant to be just one and two, they would have been one and two. It's a 12-step program, so I got to start at one. I don't understand how things work. I think I know better than people. I got one of those sponsors. I'll tell you, the reason I picked that sponsor is because his girlfriend was fly. I was like, man, this guy's doing it. And he had a really cool car. He had 50, but here's the other side. That was one side, fun life stuff. Over this side, he had 15 years sober. He was always at meetings. He always stuck his hand out and was helping people. Actually, when I was homeless and had nowhere to go, he was trying to get me a bed at some spot. I didn't even know any of these terms. I didn't know sober living or rehab. I didn't know what any of this meant. But he tried to call in a favor to get me housed. And I remember thinking, this guy doesn't even know me. I saw him speak one time and ended up with his card. I ended up with a lot of cards that I tossed. For some reason, this card stayed with me. And I hit him up, and he tried to get me in a bed somewhere. And it fell through. It didn't work out. But I was still so blown away by that. So I hit him up, and I said, hey, are you going to this? Because I was going to ask him to sponsor me because I was finally ready. And he said, you're going to this meeting? And I said, okay. And I meet him there. I don't know if you guys, you remember that time when you asked your sponsor to be your sponsor. I don't know about you, but it was not easy. And he didn't help. I remember going up to him, and I saw him, and I was like, hey, what's up? And I'm all just like, you know, I was 95 pounds when I got sober. I'm a buck 60 now, and, like, if you can find where I gained those 65 pounds, like, you know, I'll pay you. It's wild, but I was emaciated. I wasn't well. My acne was yelling at you to get away from me. I hate myself, you know, and I was not. I had this weird hunch, not like Quasimodo, but, like, my inner rubber band was a little tight because I just don't eat right, and so I was always like this. Anyway, so I see him, and I was like, hey, what's up, Benji, right? And he's like, yeah. And I was like, right on, so you're here. He's like, yeah, because I don't know what to say. I'm all awkward. Yeah. Hey, so, like, you sponsor people? Yeah? Cool. You have, like, room to, like, you know, time or, like, whatever, like, sponsor another person? Yeah. You don't know you don't know what I'm trying to say? No. You think maybe, like, perhaps if you were into it, like, you know, maybe sponsor me? That was pretty tough, wasn't it? I was like, yeah, man, you didn't make it easy. He's like, I had to make sure that you asked. I wasn't going to do it for you. And the next thing he said, are you, the only way I'm sponsoring you is if you're willing to go to any lengths. I was like, ugh. Because I hadn't heard that in meetings yet, and I hadn't read that in the book, and I didn't know any of that. But I was like, yo, that feels a bit much. Like, tall order. And I was like, so of course, what do you say? Yeah, you know, and that guy was my sponsor. He took me through the book. I would catch all these buses and get to his house and go through the book with the fine-tooth comb, and, you know, something started to happen. The magic of this program started to unfold, and I didn't need to finish everything. I just needed to get invested in it. And whereas I never wanted to be sober and didn't even think I was an alcoholic, once I believed I was an alcoholic and willing to do the work, something happened. Something very magical happened. And incrementally, it wasn't like a one-time magic finish line kind of thing. It just continues to happen. And I have these like little mini awakenings at different times throughout my sobriety. I'm 24 years sober. That's wild. I know what you're thinking. You're like, man, would you get sober at six? And I'm like, yeah, maybe. I'm just playing. Sobriety's a preservative. If you're worried about your looks, just stay sober. It works. It works really well. But I went through the book with that sponsor. I stayed with him for about 5 years. And then at a certain point, I felt stagnant from 5 to 7. And I got a new sponsor. And my sponsor now lives in Maui. And he taught me how to love my life. When I tell you when I love my life, I'm not saying that as like some sort of catchphrase or something that like I hope one day happens. I truly love my life. I also want you to know that when I say I love my life, it's not because of cash and prizes or relationships or anything like that. I love my life because I'm willing to do the work in order to believe that I love my life. And when I met my sponsor at 7 years, my now sponsor at 7 years, 17 years ago, I was honestly not loving my life. I was miserable. I was disconnected. I was in debt. Like, life was rough. I just got shafted from a job. Like, all these things had unfolded in ways that I felt like were very unfair in sobriety. And so when he told me and taught me these ways of loving my life, he had me yell it out loud. I love my life. When I met him at Starbucks, Santa Monica, 15th of Montana, in the middle of all of it, and this guy's like to ask me about my program at that time. Now, I was sponsoring 13 dudes. I was at 10 to 12 meetings a week. I had commitments at 4 of them. I spoke on average like weekly because, you know, people want to hear my pitch. And my ego was through the roof. And he keeps asking about my program. He goes, okay, what else? I'm like, that's all I got, man. I'm kind of crushing it. And he goes, you didn't mention anything about personal inventory, daily, pen to paper, 10 step. Oh, you know, I spot check, prompt to make amends, you know, except when I'm not prompt. And he goes, okay, but no pen to paper daily. I go, no. And then he goes, okay, you didn't talk about the wet part of water. You didn't talk about your higher power, prayer, meditation. I'm like, you know, I check in. I typically give a shout out to Big Homie, you know, more often when I'm taking a deuce or, you know, on the road. And he goes, you don't hit your knees morning and night? And I go, nah, I don't get down like that. I ain't the one. He goes, okay, I'm going to put you on my phone as H.A. Richie. Hell's Angels? Ha ha. He's like, nah, half-assed. Bro, you hear about those sponsees, those commitments, all those meetings and like speaking, you know, like what are you like, can I get 3/4? Yeah, but what I realized what he pointed out is I didn't have a personal program. I think because I'm sponsoring people and taking them through the book that I'm working my program. The only thing I'm working is my 12th step. If I'm not doing 10 and 11, and 11 is an interesting step, it doesn't mean I just say my prayers and meditate. Improve on my conscious contact. If I'm not improving, if I'm not organic in that moment and connecting and that prayer is having meaning specific to that moment and not just something I regurgitate, then I'm missing the point. I'm failing to enlarge my spiritual life through hard work and sacrifice. I love my life today, but there's work involved. And I got stagnant. I met my ex-wife, guess where? A&A. Yeah, I was at a herpes pod dance in Glendale. I don't know if you guys have been to, Mark knows. You've been to herpes pod. It's amazing. Herpes pod, wipe, anything, acky paw, cracky paw, wacky paw, whatever. That's all young people in AA. And it's really cool. It actually helps you get involved. When I was 21 and came to AA, it was a death sentence. I wanted nothing to do with this place. So to be in a place where it was actually an opportunity was kind of cool. But I went to this Halloween dance in Glendale, and my ex was dressed up like Jessica Rabbit, and like, yeah, that's all it took. And looking back, they say that dating in the rooms is like shopping for fresh produce in the dented can aisle. And don't take offense. We're all dented cans. This is the island of misfit toys. Real quick, if you're confused, let me just pull the curtain back. You blew it. Welcome. But here's another thing. What's weird about like making a big mistake, like ending up here, I thought that my life was over when I ended up here. Here's the weird part about Alcoholics Anonymous. There's this cool little card game called Hearts. For those that have played Hearts, Hearts is every round there's 26 points that go down. And it's like golf. Low score wins. You don't want to get those bad things. You don't want to get those points. But here, there's a little trick. If you get every single bad thing, all the points, you get all 26, you actually take 26 off your score or give 26 to everyone. It's called shooting the moon. And it's like almost like you do everything wrong, but you do it wrong so well that you win. That's this. Coming to AA, I shot the moon. It's unfair. They told me five basic food groups. I'm like, I'm going to make a run for the border. I'm going to Taco Bell because I know better than those five basic groups. I don't need veggies. There's lettuce in my taco supreme. You know? They tell me I need 8 hours of sleep a night. I'm trying to party. You know, they tell me exactly what I need to do. Stay educated. Do these things. Help someone else. I'm like, I'm from the school of get mine. If I get mine, the world is right. I don't care if you're burning alive next to me. If my bank account is flush and she's under my arm, I don't care. I'm good. And I feel like if I'm good, that's all that matters. And I come here and you say, no, 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 no. You help the next person. If you help them get good, you're good. And so here I am doing everything wrong in life. And then I'm drinking and doing whatever else, stealing, lying, cheating, all the things. And yet I come to you with all of that and you give me the keys to the kingdom. It's not fair. I know people, good-hearted people, that don't have this and they struggle because they don't have a program. They don't have a sponsor. I never wanted to get a sponsor. I felt like it, like you ever go to the gym and there's that dude in the polo. And it's always, his name is always Chad. And he's like, hey, what's up? You should get yourself a personal trainer. And I'm like, back up, Chad. You know. And it's like coming to AA and they're like, oh, you should get yourself a sponsor. And I'm like, what? I'll figure it out. And meanwhile, there's all those machines and things and like, you know, what, the metal pterodactyl. And I don't even know what muscle group that does. And I'm not here to lift weights. I just want to look good. I'm going to buy the new Vuori outfit. I'm going to go water fountain to water fountain, and hopefully I get buff or whatever we go to the gym for, in shape. I obviously don't go to the gym. And I thought I knew better. And I had to avail myself to the whole part of this program, everything. I had to get the sponsor. I had to get commitments. I had to go to a meeting a day. I had to go through that book with a fine-tooth comb with someone that knew it. And I had to highlight words and define things and write stuff in the margin. Not only did we read the black print, we added to the black print. I'm like, this is going to take forever. I found out that put it this way first. So Boyo, we were friends for almost 30 years. And unfortunately, he passed away 8.5 years ago, June 28th, 2017. What's funny is my sobriety date is June 21st, 01. So that was the last day of my cake tour that year, 16. And he was supposed to give me a cake. I met up with him on Tuesday. Wednesday night, he was supposed to give me a cake at Second and Hill, this horrible meeting in Santa Monica. But they give cakes. And I wanted my boy to give me a cake. And I met with him the day before, and he had fallen off. And I met with him and I said, hey, let's get you back on track, man. I'm not your sponsor or anything, but like we can read those books and do the deal and I'll show you how I get down like we used to, and hopefully you get it back again. We played Bones that day like we always do for hours. He couldn't win a round. That dude taught me how to play. I mean, he would always school me. And for some reason that day I owned him. Next day I'm about to head to that meeting that I was taking a cake at, and I get a call from Santa Monica Police Department. And they said that my boy Damien was on life support. So I go to UCLA where he was at, the hospital he was at. And I've seen many family members and a couple other friends that were on life support before. And it never had the same effect. Like him and I ran the street, like we had so many memories. There's nowhere I can go in LA without a memory associated to my boy. And what's funny is I thought it was a sword in the stone kind of thing. Like I had magic words that I could wake my boy up. That I was different because of our relationship, because of the experiences that we had. And you know what sucks? When someone's on life support, it comes right back. He was, his body is still warm, you know? And I remember like just telling him like, hey bro, wake up, dude, stop messing around. Because I knew he had it. This dude got on a flight to New York with no ticket post 9/11. This dude snuck into the Grammys. You know what I mean? This dude snuck into Buena Vista Social Club. Like this dude like worked all kinds of different things. Like this man, he was such a shortcut guy. And I knew he was going to come out of it, and I was wrong. The book talks about alcohol being no respecter of persons. Doesn't matter what he was going to bring to the world, what he had already brought to the world. Didn't matter about the experiences that we shared. He's gone. Gone, gone. It stings. It stings. I'm sure wherever he is, he's laughing at me right now, crying over him. Sure, some choice words he can't say in 2026, but whatever. I miss my boy. You know, we both grew up fatherless. We were both Protestant single moms. We were always wondering about our dads because we had never met our dads. And Bob, like I said, I never met Bob. I found out probably about 15 years ago, maybe a little bit more, that Bob passed away. He died of alcoholism and depression. They actually said, I got a copy of the death certificate. They said it's for next of kin, and I was like, well, that's me. And they're like, no, it's not. So I sent them the birth certificate. They're like, okay, fair. And because they didn't know he had kids, because I never knew this cat. I get a gift. This is, I don't know how many years now. Probably about 10 years ago, I got a gift, one of those DNA tests. I don't know if you guys have ever done one of those, like spitting the thing, find out how Irish you are, you know. And I'm 60-something percent, if you care. And then I always knew that Bob was Cherokee, you know, and so I was, you know, native as well. And then it shows up, you know, I'm like 20-something percent native. I'm, 60-something percent Irish, and then a mix of whatever else. And I forget about it. But once you do one of those tests, if anyone's done it, you know they hit you up every other week, and they're like, hey, give us another $100. Like, we'll tell you if you're related to Genghis Khan or something. And you're like, not falling for that. We're all related to Genghis Khan. I know how that works. I read a book. So I wake up this one morning. I just got back from Ireland, actually, my first time out there. I brought my daughter and my ex, and my mom was out there. And we're in Big Bear, my ex, my daughter, and our friends and their kids. And I don't know, you wake up, check emails and that, and I get that spam email. This one's a little different. I was like, oh, this is a new tactic. And it says DNA match, parent slash child. Oh, Bobo's dead. So I'm like, I'm looking at my daughter like, you got an older brother or sister, you know what I mean? Because prior to my ex, I was kind of a low-hanging fruit kind of a guy, you know? Like a man of convenience, if you will. Don't judge. I don't see any arbiters here, you know? Like, yeah, whatever. I was a man about town. And love you. Yeah, that's one for the books. So I open it up and it says Roy A, August 28th, 1962. Not my kid. So I screenshot it, I text my mom a picture of it, and then I just put question mark, and she writes back in caps lock a big F bomb. She says, call me. Now I'm me in this moment, so I'm like, what am I looking at? I felt like Keanu. I'm like, I know karate? Like, just confused. I'm like, what is this, you know? If I'm watching a movie of what's happened, I'm like, yo, that's that dude's dad. And but I'm me, so I just go full Keanu. And then everyone starts catching on. My ex runs out. She's like, oh, I think Richie found his dad. Like, thought he was dead. It's actually this other dude. And then everyone starts looking online to find this Roy dude, Roy Aguilar. And they're like, looking for this cat, whatever, whatever. Find him on LinkedIn, first spot. I was like, all right, we're doing okay. LinkedIn, he's a career man, all right. And what's funny is I wasn't looking for, like, you know, a wealthy dad or anything, but I just didn't want a dad that was coming to me like, hey, son, give me a ticket to come see you. You know, like, oh, dad, chill. But then we found him on Facebook, and this dude didn't have not a lot of activity on Facebook, but every year this dude's got two birthdays. Part of the... It's crazy. You can't write this. God's handiwork is like marvelous, magical, inexplicable. He's part of the Neck Up Club. He's sober. So I reach out to him and say, hey, looks like we share some DNA. Also looks like you knew my mom. No one did anything wrong. I'm a dad. Don't really need a dad. It looks like you're part of the Neck Up Club. At first I thought, oh my gosh, what if I have more time than dad? Oh no, like what if he's trying to give me fatherly advice? I'm like, oh dad, shh, shh. That's not how this works, my guy. Time rides, you know? Like, you get to my time, you can tell me what to do. Until then, shh. Also, I get shotgun. I always get shotgun. That's how this works. And but he's got 2.5 years more than me. He's in Malibu right now at this retreat, this men's retreat. And we've gone to meetings, we spoke at conventions, we've done so much fun stuff. We met, and it was like we had known each other our whole lives. I had tangible evidence of a birth certificate that was mine with this man Bob's name on it and his death certificate, meaning I would never have a chance to meet my father. And that was legal, factual evidence. And I was dead wrong. And God saw fit that I might have met my dad at a different point, having never met him. And we went to game one of the World Series in 2024 and watched Freddie walk it off, sitting in the left pavilion, going nuts. Went to game three this year, saw Freddie walk it off. It's unreal, the lives that we have. I told my barber this crazy story about my dad because he's Mexican. And I was like, hey, bro, because I'm Mexican, right? I forgot to tell you. So I'm Mexican, right? I thought it was Native American via Cherokee because I'm ignorant. It's Native American via Michoacan. And I go, oh, snaps. So I tell my barber, I go, hey, bro, I'm Mexican. He goes, fool, I always knew you were Mexican. I was like, what are you talking about? He's like, man, you always button your buttons up to the top. He's like, you know, you used to drink and do a lot of other stuff. You thought this one fool was your dad, but it was this other fool. He's like, yeah, you Mexican. And I was like... There's a part in the back of the book, The Spiritual Experience, the second appendix. There's a quote by this guy, Herbert Spencer. It talks about contempt prior to investigation. I told you my experience at my first meeting and how I wanted nothing to do with this, and I said never. I thought I knew everything there was to know about Alcoholics Anonymous by going to one meeting, when a meeting is just a mere fraction of this whole program. I didn't look at the literature. I never stuck my hand out. I didn't connect with anything greater. I did nothing besides go to one meeting and thought I had it all down. If I can give anything or urge anything to all of us, including myself, is to continue to investigate, and ultimately, I hope we all find what we're looking for. That's all I have. Thank you.